Moores.
Present.
Thank you. Kevin Phillips. Stephanie Rasu.
Here.
Oh, Kevin. Kevin, you're here. Thank you. Stephanie Rasu.
Here.
Thank you. Kate Supran.
I'm here.
Deb Sareem.
Here.
Wendy Treat.
Present. Also want to let you know Michael Box joined as well.
Thank you. And Danielle Wierson.
It's Wierson here.
Oh my goodness. Thank you. you said Michael Box just joined. Thank you.
And Jeremy Cruiser.
Jeremy Cruiser's here. Thank you. I think I saw Ellie in here also. Yes.
Mel Banta also joined, Yvonne.
Melvin also joined. Thank you all so much. So the next thing that we will do is the land acknowledgement. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gayo Kono, the Cayuga Nation. The Gayo Kono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Gayo Kono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of Gayo Kono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. Thank you, everyone. A couple of things with the meeting reminders is that if you are part of the EA, to please put the EA in front of your name. Also, as we are continuing the meeting, please make sure to raise your hand if you want to be called on before making any comments or remarks. You will be acknowledged today by me, and we'll take it from there. Also, as a reminder, items that you put in the chat, they're not considered part of the meeting. So if you are wanting to share something with the rest of the group, again, please raise your hand so you could be acknowledged, and then you can make those comments so they could be part of the official record. And with that, we're going to move on to the approval of the minutes from last meeting. If anyone is ready and willing to motion for the approval of the minutes.
So moved.
Yes, Wendy.
Motion to approve the minutes of the September 4th meeting by unanimous consent.
All those in favor, please use your reaction buttons, and you can use the green check mark to vote yes.
Yvonne, just for clarification, if it's unanimous consent, someone just needs to second it, and then we're done.
Thank you. Can I get a second?
Second.
Thanks.
Thank you. All right. Minutes have been approved by unanimous consent. Thank you for that reminder, Wendy. Now we move on to the call for late additions to the agenda. Does anyone have anything that they would like to discuss further? Great. So we're going to move on to our minutes, or sorry, our business of the day. One of the things that I will share with everyone right now is that we are doing, and by we, I mean the Cornell University as a whole is doing a testing of the emergency ways to contact us at 12:10, I believe, or 12:15. So I know that Eric is supporting us with the Office of the Assemblies in muting our conversation while that is going on until that ends. So that is going to create a little bit of disruption. In the meantime, though, if we can, I think we're moving really fast. Eric, can I assume that the interim president and vice president are not here yet?
They're not here yet, Yvonne. So with your permission, I'll go ahead and mute everybody and pause the recording. The alert should be coming on in a minute or so, and then we'll resume when it's over.
Yeah, sounds perfect. Let's go ahead and do that. And yeah, you just let us know once that's over.
Perfect.
Thank you.
All right, Yvonne, I think we're ready to resume whenever you are.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Eric. Really appreciate it. And thank you, everyone, for your patience while we did that alert test. We're going to move on to our next item of the agenda, which are the committee reports. And I will get us started with the executive committee report. So, yes, Jessica.
Actually, you want to wait for the president for that.
Yes. he's not here quite yet.
But if you have a minute, we have just hired a clerk for the employee assembly, and she is in Eric's office. If you have a minute, we could introduce her.
That would be fantastic.
Hi, everybody. I'm here in my office with Aaron Coppersmith, who's a first-year student here, joining us from Delhi, New York, just a few counties to the east. And Aaron will be our EA clerk for 24-25 and hopefully for a few years to come. So please help me give her a warm welcome, and hopefully we can all get together in person as soon as possible.
Thank you so much, Eric and Jessica and Aaron. Welcome. We look forward to working with you. And thank you so much for the support that you're going to be providing, that you have already provided, and that you will continue to provide for the rest of the academic year with the EA. Jessica, I wonder if there's anything on the agenda, I guess, that we can go over while we wait for the president. Otherwise, I think he was supposed to be joining us at 12:15, which we can absolutely be patient and wait another minute.
Yep. I think I would just wait for him. I'm sure he'll be here punctually. And if not, I'm sure there's a good reason. You could just let everyone know how you're going to be handling questions and the format here, just to explain it all ahead of time.
Absolutely, yeah. So the interim president is going to be giving some remarks, and after that, he's going to be answering some questions, pre-submitted questions that were submitted by all of you here. After the fact, if we do have a few more minutes for additional Q&A, I ask that you raise your hand, be acknowledged by me, and then we'll go from there in asking those questions. For full transparency, I will be prioritizing members of the EA in asking questions. But of course, you know, you're a community member, you're a staff member, part of the larger Cornell community as well. Please feel free to raise your hand. And again, if we have that opportunity for you to ask that question, we'll definitely we'll do that. Thank you for being patient. While we wait a few more minutes, I did see that Vice President and Chief Human Resource Officer Christine Lovely is here with us. So I would like to take a moment to welcome Christine Lovely to the Employee Assembly meeting. Eric.
Thank you. Sorry. President Kalikoff has just joined now, so after a minute allowing him to get ready, I think we're ready to proceed.
Great, thank you.
I'm ready. Shall I start?
Yes, welcome, Interim President Michael Kalikoff to our second Employee Assembly meeting of the year. Yes, if you wouldn't mind giving your remarks and then answering some of the pre-submitted questions, and then if there is additional time, and actually I really apologize, our agenda actually starts with the committee reports, so I ask that, you know, if you're able to be a little bit patient with us as the committees share their reports, and then we can begin with your remarks.
No, please go ahead. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you. So I'll start with the executive committee. The executive committee met last Friday, September 13, and among many other things, we discussed the way to engage additional members of the Cornell community into the employee assembly. So we're working on a series of events right now, which we'll then propose to you all as the employee assembly larger body, where we hope to, again, promote educate individuals about what the employee assembly is, what it does for you all as employees, and what it can do, and continue to develop and strengthen the sense of community here at Cornell. So that is the executive committee. If the Communications Outreach and Recognition Committee can share. Don?
Hello. We don't have a lot to share today. The two main things is we're still in the midst of working on setting up our first meeting, but our goal is to release the first newsletter the last week of October. So that's where we're at right now.
Thank you so much, Don. Employee Education and Development Committee, Deb.
Hi, everyone. So I don't have much to report either. I am working to try to get our first meeting as a committee set up, hopefully before our next full assembly meeting. If someone could just direct me, I only have two confirmed members. If someone could direct me to who my members are, that would be amazing. I've looked on the box folder and could not find those just yet. So I know it's very new since I was just appointed last meeting to be our chair. But that is the update for the Education Committee.
Thank you, Deb. Yes, Wendy?
Just a point of clarification. I, as Vice Chair of Operations and Finance, am responsible for letting people know who's on their committee. And I am working on that document and we'll get it sent out to everyone to let them know where they live and where we have gaps.
Thank you so much, Wendy, for that update.
Thank you, Wendy.
Benefits and Policy Committee, Employee Welfare Committee, Christy Mahoney.
Hello. We had our first fall meeting just prior to this meeting. As typical, about a dozen people gathered. Our top discussion today was on a proposed revision to the holiday leave policy. I'm serving on a working group in partnership with Jessica Reynolds. We have some feedback we'll be sharing with her later today. Our next meeting, our first meeting in October will be with Michelle Arteby providing us an update on the childcare initiatives that Cornell is advancing in partnership with the regional and state of New York, the Ithaca region and the state of New York. And additionally, we are advancing a conversation around the employee experience and parking concerns that were pretty dramatic last semester due to student activity and to continue. So we're advancing that conversation.
Thank you so much, Christy. Benefits and Policy Committee, Bethany Dixon. I don't believe Bethany is here today, but I did attend the last meeting. And so we talked about different updates through HR that will be coming up as part of the different policies. And I invite you to read them once they come out in full. And we talked a little bit about policy 6.14 around nepotism. We talked about policy 6.9 about time off and leaves. Also had a very brief conversation about that conversation on floating holidays that Christy mentioned. Talked about background checks and data breaches as well, which you should have received an email if you were impacted by that as an employee with information on what to do with that. So that is the benefits and policy committee. Elections committee, Stephanie.
Hi, thank you. As part of the elections committee, we have not yet met as a full committee. I'm working on getting that meeting scheduled, similar to Deb, hopefully before our next full EA meeting. But elections, they are going to be held in the spring as usual, and I'll be working with the Office of the Assemblies mid-January or mid-December, early January to finalize that schedule and all of the election details.
Thank you, Stephanie. And thank you, everyone who serves as a chair of our committees. Really appreciate your time and leadership. And then I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to our interim president who's here. And again, take the time to welcome him and our lovely vice president, Christine Lovely, as well.
Thanks very much. And hi, everybody. I look forward to meeting everybody in person. Thanks for all you're doing on the Employee Assembly. Maybe I'll just start by some introductory comments about what I've been trying to do. And I hope some of you have attended some of the college-based meetings that John Silicano and I have had now with all the colleges. We had two more yesterday, Arts, Architecture, and Planning, and VET were the final two. And a lot of staff in those conversations with staff and faculty, some questions around from specific to staff issues in those. But fundamentally, what John and I were trying to do is really talk about our efforts to build community in this period of time where, you know, there are a lot of things pulling us apart, and we sometimes forget about the things that hold us together. And that, so part of that has been going to all the colleges, going to the assemblies and speaking to the assembly. So this is part of that, going to the Faculty Senate. My wife and I, of course, were in Donlan Hall. That was a significant part of it, meeting students, meeting faculty, meeting student groups. I just left a group of the Arab Student Association and Muslim students. All of that, and I will add, part of that is an effort to outreach to the community. So Joel has organized a number of meetings with community leaders where we're talking about the problems that the community is facing, either Tompkins County or the Ithaca city, and how we can work together to try and address some of those problems. So all of this is an effort, obviously, in a very stressful time where we're having an ongoing war in the Middle East, a lot of high passions, students, faculty, and staff, an ongoing political campaign, union activity, and of course, a political attack, a sort of specific targeted political attack on higher education. So I think it really is important to stress community and what pulls us together. I hope today you'll read my op-ed or letter in the Daily Sun. I'm going to have a regular outreach to the Daily Sun to really talk about community, talk about what we're trying to do. Anything that I can do that I can do to help in staff in that regard, I will be. Hey, has made some suggestions about ways to reach out to staff, and we're scheduling a number of those with Christine. So Christine and I will partner on those efforts to to talk about issues. And so this is one of those. And let me then turn to the questions that you've put forward. And first is plans for interim presidency and how employees are factored into those plans. I would say that, you know, I've really just spoken about one of the major plans, or really around building community. I think the UAW strike particularly put some stress on that, you know, on the employee side. There was a lot of narrative around Cornell not caring for its employees and not being concerned about particularly financial issues. And I tried as much as possible to really refute that narrative. It's simply not true in my view. It's something. We are a community. We are all part of that community. Absolutely essential. Cornell's mission could not be achieved without employees. It couldn't be achieved without faculty. It couldn't be achieved without students. We're all part of that team effort here. And I've spent the last 24 years working with staff, faculty, and students at various, you know, either in my lab or teaching in my administrative roles as department chair or dean, certainly as provost and now as interim president. So on the second thing that's raised here is visibility and accessibility to the broader employee community. I have reached out for suggestions. As I've said, AHA has provided some. We're going to try and have some town halls with larger segments of the of staff, and try and talk about the issues that are on the minds of staff and respond to those. I do. Many of you have seen me in town halls over the years, so I plan to continue that practice of just being accessible, answering questions, and having a conversation about what we can do and what we can do better, frankly. On the role of the interim president, it says explaining the role of the interim president, allowances, not sure what's meant by allowances, but I'll take any allowances I can get, expectations and limitations of the position. And really, I would say, you know, I am serving as the president, so it's not as though I don't have the full responsibilities and expectations of being president. What I don't have is a long timeline to accomplish things. So I'm thinking about, you know, shorter wins, this kind of building community, particularly after it's been so stressed after last semester, is a highlight of that. But also, as I've been going around to colleges, I've been talking about kind of doubling down on what I think is one of Cornell's signature strengths, and that is our collaboration, our ability to create this terrific community that works across boundaries. I've talked about low fences and high aspirations. So that's a significant area in which you'll hear more. We're building some programs still from when I was provost, some of the radical collaborations. And we have significant plans to particularly to strengthen connections with our medical college. Some of that is around systems where we, you know, over time, we all have different systems. We have, a Cornell University that is Cornell, Geneva, Cornell Tech, and while Cornell Medicine have different, those first three are all on one set of systems, while Cornell has a different system for virtually every area, whether it's finance, HR, you know, enrollment of students, workday, employee, all different. It's a significant barrier, and it's an effort we'll be making beginning over the next 2 years, certainly won't be completed, to try and unify those systems. So strategically setting that up is a big effort. And finally, I guess, you know, what I want to do is make sure that we have in place a solid foundation for the next president. And part of that is hiring a new provost, a you know, a long-term provost. I'm enormously thankful for John Silicato coming in and helping me during this period coming out of retirement. But we'll be announcing a new provost in the next couple of weeks, and that person will help transition to the new president. And I also hope finally to stabilize some finances for the new president, because we have seen some financial headwinds recently. And I think we need to set ourselves up. We've had a great growth since the pandemic, in both in terms of numbers of staff and faculty. We have to restrain that growth, and that process is in place. And then finally, how would the interim president like the EA to work with him to address employee concerns beyond bringing forth resolutions? And I think that's a great question. What I would like is to have a conversation. So I don't want to speak through resolutions and responses to resolutions. I'd love to have a conversation, come to more EA meetings on specific areas and have a conversation about, as I say, what we can do together and what we can do better. So maybe with that, I would open it up to any questions that anybody has. Any hands raised? Hey.
Hello, it's me again. I saw you at CUF and now I'm seeing you here. You just can't get rid of me. Before I get into my question, I just want to preface by saying I'm really glad you're doing staff outreach. I think from what I've seen with staff, there's a lot of curiosity around you. You've been around for 2 decades in various roles, but this one is the most impactful as it relates to staff. And I think your efforts to build relationships with staff will be really helpful to ensure policies, initiatives, priorities are successfully carried out, because there's a foundation of trust there. So my question is, in your recent Cornell article that you shared in the chat, you mentioned that your mom was a secretary at UPenn, effectively making you a scholarship kid through free tuition offered to the children of staff. And I thought that was really lovely. As your mother was a staff member, how has that informed or not your perspective on staff at institutions of higher education? Or more broadly, how do you view the staff of the role of staff at institutions of higher education?
Yeah, great question. On my mom, she was a short-term staff. So I have to, you know, in full disclosure, she started to work at Penn in anticipation of my older sister applying and getting staff scholarship funds. And then she stopped working at Penn when my twin brother and I graduated from Penn, you know, and the scholarships. And she very much enjoyed the benefits, very much enjoyed the work. She had a couple of roles. One is secretary to the law librarian, and then she was the administrator of the general honors program at Penn for the last couple of years that she was there and I was in school. But I have a tremendous appreciation for staff. You know, I ran a lab for 21 years here, a genetics lab, a big lab. It was at one point probably 20 people in the lab, a number of staff. We couldn't have done what we did. I couldn't physically do the things that that staff did in the lab, whether it was the specific technical advances that we made, the ability to genetically manipulate mice technically. It's quite complicated. Hiring outstanding staff, real specialists, people that just are pros, are professionals, is something that allowed us to make the discoveries and accomplishments that we made. So I have an enormous appreciation. And of course, then I became dean of the veterinary college and, you know, relied enormously on staff to accomplish what we accomplished there. So, and of course, I would say the vet college is a bit of an interesting place in that way, in which we have a hospital, we have a diagnostic lab. Those units are arguably run more by staff than by faculty. You know, the continuity and the ability to see clients, treat patients, do diagnostics. It's all critically dependent on staff. So in terms of appreciation and understanding, all there. I also recognize, I think, some of the challenges, or I would say some of the concerns. One of these came up in the AAP meeting yesterday, that you know, around the difference between faculty that have tenure and staff that don't, and how that affects rights and freedoms, et cetera. And I made the point, you know, there really are no differences associated with tenure around rights to free expression and rights to First Amendment. There are none. Tenure is around, you know, simply means that you don't have a defined term contract. You have a lifelong contract once you get tenure. It doesn't mean any distinction around your rights as an employee at Cornell to say what you want to say, to express your feelings. And it also doesn't give tenure track faculty any more ability to infringe on other people's rights than it does others. I do understand there's always this issue of, you know, status and that sort of thing. But one of the things that I love about Cornell is it's a place with very little hubris and, you know, very little shirtiness, you know, if you will. And so there is a little bit of that, but I find it much less than in other places, and I find that really valuable. Yes, Jeremy. I think you're muted, Jeremy. I'm not hearing.
Sorry, Emmanuel, mute also. You bring up a really good kind of segue into a conversation that has been going around the employee assembly and other spaces of leadership that you've kind of touched on there, but I'd like to hear a little bit more about. So during some of these kind of heated moments where there's protests and demonstrations, some have crossed lines, gone too far, and needed some kind of repercussions. And I want to start by saying I have really appreciated the nuance that you have consistently expressed since taking the position of interim president on freedom of speech coupled with responsibility. That's been, I think, really, for me, has been really well received. But when we're looking at these protests and involvement in these protests by faculty, students, staff, one of the concerns that has come up and only been kind of realized by some of us as these situations have occurred is that there seems to be a very formal process for dealing with students who violate code of conduct in these kinds of situations. There are very formal processes for faculty and how they are handled through this kind of process. And there are some protections there for them. And as staff, some of us have looked at, because we are at-will employees, there really is no protections at all for our employment if we were to take part in any kind of protest, whether it be on campus officially or through our own social media pages off campus. There's no, as far as we can tell, there is no actual protection for us to be able to actually be our genuine, you know, you hear this all the time, be your genuine self, but that's not really a viable reality for us.
Yeah, Jeremy, let me disagree with you a little bit there, because you do absolutely have protections, employment protections in labor law, in your First Amendment rights. Now, I say First Amendment rights in this. Yeah, we are a private institution. It's not formally your First Amendment rights, but there is no example that I know of where Cornell has sanctioned an individual for expressing their views in the public square. Now let me caution that or maybe caveat that a bit. Both faculty and students both faculty and staff have a professional responsibility to not undermine their ability to do their job. And so if a faculty member says things repeatedly that result in the intimidation of students and the inability of students or the unwillingness of students to take their classes, for example, this is a high bar, but it is a bar that can be crossed. I don't know that it's been crossed at Cornell, but it's one where you can, by stating your views in a way that is unprofessional, and this is part of the AAU, in the AAUP language, you can undermine your ability to do your job as an employee. Now, having said that, I wouldn't draw the distinction between students on the one hand, where we have a student campus code, and employees on the other, whether faculty or staff, where we don't have a code of conduct for them, but we have a grievance process or a 6.4 bias harassment process, which is essentially the same. Now, when you say we have no protections at all, that there is a robust process that has to go through to be able to sanction an individual and you know, in some ways punish an individual, whether it's a faculty member or a staff member. And so I do want to reassure you, and there's labor law behind this, I do want to assure you that you're not hanging out there with no protections and, you know, somebody can say off with your head. Other thoughts or questions or disagreements or, you know, conversation about this?
Wanted to ask within that vein that the student assembly last year passed a referendum around the divestment vote. And I'm curious, you know, like knowing that it passed and was supported by the majority of the student body, what were your thoughts on moving forward with that?
Yeah, great, great good question. We have a process to consider divestment, whatever the content. So a content neutral process. It requires, the first step of that is some consensus on the part of the community that this is the right action to take. That consensus is achieved by all the governing bodies passing a resolution, an equivalent resolution. And that happened during sustainability and resulted in some changes over time to our endowment investment strategies and processes. We have not achieved a consensus on campus. There was a student referendum resulted in a plurality of students that participated in the referendum from voting in favor. Martha has the option of bringing something directly without a full campus consensus to the Board of Trustees. She decided not to do that. But we have not achieved that first step of a consensus, which would require the EA, the UA, the Faculty Senate, the SA, you could argue, has already done this through their student resolution. But those bodies would need to bring the same resolution to the trustees. And then there are two real criteria that the trustees can consider. Is this, and I forget the exact language, but it's such a something that is so offensive to basic principles of the university that something that this activity is something we have to remove ourselves from. And then secondly, will the removal actually materially do something, or is it just a political gesture? And so we're at from my perspective, we're at the start of it. We haven't achieved a consensus, which should be, I think that's a fair guideline for going forward. It's not just somebody demands something or one group says, this is what we want. It's a full consensus of the community. We don't have it.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Really appreciate the clarity and guidance on how we can share governance, move about this. I was just informed that we have a few pre-submitted questions that I would like to ask. And if anyone else has any questions, please go ahead and raise your hand and then we can absolutely call on you as well. So one of the first pre-submitted question is how will the UAW agreement on the increased wages affect all other non-union staff compensation at the university?
Yeah. Well, you know, we'll have other union negotiations. We'll have employee. You know, this will be a consideration as part of our SIP. I will say, you know, one of the compelling features of the dining workers and custodians was they are really amongst the lowest paid employees at Cornell, and one of the real issues was how to get individuals at Cornell to a minimum level. What's the appropriate minimum level for all employees at Cornell? And, you know, we have in the past through our SIP mechanisms and others really tried to prioritize those people in our community that are struggling the most. And we've seen enormous inflation in the community. So I can't say specifically how this is going to affect our SIP processes, which take into account inflation, et cetera. But I am very pleased about the way we ended up with our priority of trying to dedicate the bulk of the resources that we added to this contract to our lowest paid employees.
Thank you. Our next question is, can the university provide a sense of how long we will continue to have land acknowledgements prior to the university meetings? Since we have seen how the ideas of settler colonialism can be misapplied vis-a-vis Israel and the damage it has caused, I think that a time frame for this discontinuation should be considered. If it won't be considered, then can we include along with the land acknowledgement the Pledge of Allegiance to acknowledge the many good things this country has done in an increasingly fraught world?
Wow. Well, that I think is a call, as I understand that question, is a call for a political statement on the part of the university. And let me just talk about why we won't be making those kinds of political statements. I do think, if nothing else, the last 9 months has demonstrated the difficulty for institutions of higher education that make statements that are political statements, which subsume the thought of what is essentially a community with many, many diverse opinions about things. So for a president, for an institution to mandate a statement that is a political statement at the beginning of meetings, which is what I sort of thought I heard in this settler colonialism or raising the flag, is just not something that I will support, because I think it both assumes some role for a president or provost in terms of statements, or assumes a political role of the university that I think is inappropriate in terms of suppressing free speech and free thought. And it will never satisfy individuals who, on the one hand, it won't be enough to satisfy people who would like to call out settler colonialism. And on the other hand, it will be offensive to people who reject that idea and want different statements. So you get into this sort of never-ending dispute. And the best thing from my perspective is to say out.
How do you see the UAW negotiations impacting university output this semester?
Well, I think we're having a transition back. I mean, it was a very strident union effort, and I'm as one of the things that I, as I said, that I felt was unfortunate was the characterization of Cornell as uncaring, unfeeling. You know, there were unfortunate videos of mischaracterizing people's views. You know, employees' views of other employees. It was really got over the top. So all of that requires, some transition back, some careful. One of the things we really wanted to do was to say to all of our employees, you're welcome back. We understand it was a strident campaign. People felt passionately about issues. I talked to a lot of employees that were really passionate about this, and people that were upset with me for volunteering in Toni Morrison Hall and trying to support our students. So all of that, I think, requires some transition back and some careful, thoughtful communication to welcome students back. And welcome staff back. And we're well into that. And I think we've done a good job, managers, supervisors, in terms of trying to make clear what is so important, which is, Cornell's traditional position as one of the best employers in the country, one of the most caring, best places to work in the country. And that's what that's our ambition and what we want to get back to.
Thank you. Our next question is, what are two of the of your major areas of focus for the university this semester?
One, community, two, community, three, community. It's reaching out, it's being accessible, it's being visible. I told my secretary, my schedule this week is an example of torture. I have events every night, multiple, Hey mentioned Cuff. It was one of probably 10 events where I'm trying to reach out to community just this week. So I think it's really important. I think it's something I'm really devoting a lot of time to, because we have been so fractured and so stressed. And people need to understand that we're all part of a community. We all are valuable, essential parts of that community. Everybody belongs here. Everybody's respected here. Everybody's voice is valued. And we don't get into this, kind of shouting at each other or making demands of each other.
Thank you for that. That's actually a really good segue into our next question. In what ways do you envision rebuilding trust between Cornell senior leadership, faculty, employees, and students?
Yeah, I guess the number one sort of tactic that I'm using is transparency and frank conversations. So this is one of them. And I'm having, as I say, many, many of these conversations with groups that want to hear from the president, want to, state their case, speak truth to power, if you will, but also hear from leadership about their views. And, sometimes we'll disagree, sometimes we'll agree. And sometimes we can, in a lot of these, I come away with good ideas and things we can do better. So my number one tactic is reaching out, talking to people, getting engaged, and showing up.
Thank you. Yes, Wendy.
I actually just kind of have a follow-up. Thank you for joining us today, Interim President Kalikoff. You said that you're doing town halls to colleges and that sort of thing. What are you doing for the individuals that are in non-academic units, such as our custodians, our dining hall staff, that sort of thing, to reach out to them, facilities, anyone, even like, I'm going to use Kate Supron for an example. He's not in a college. He's in an administrative unit. So how are you reaching out to those individuals on campus?
Yeah, that is the planned town halls, Wendy. So we're planning those town halls for all the, you know, for example, the allocated units, research, SCL, all of that stuff, employees that are not and professionals and leaders that are not in college units. So those we're organizing now. You'll see those over the next several weeks.
Thank you. Our next question is, there has been an increase in the addition of labor acknowledgments to acknowledge the forced labor this country has played part in and how it relates to disenfranchisement of forced labor workers. Does the university plan to address the historic and systemic disenfranchisement of forced labor work in this country and how generation of people have been and continue to be negatively impacted?
You know, again, I think that really falls into this desire for the university to take political positions, which I'm sorry, we're not going to take. So I understand this issue may be very important to someone, but there are many issues that are important to other people and many views that if the university stated these as official positions would offend other people in our community. So we're simply not going to do it.
Thank you. That is actually the end of our pre-submitted questions. We do have one more minute left with you if anyone else has any other questions.
Well, let me just say, I want to again, thank you for your leadership in the Employee Assembly. It's really important. I hope to engage with you on a regular basis. I'll come back whenever you invite me and look forward to discussing specific issues and ways we can continue to make Cornell the great place it is.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate your presence, Interim President Michael Kolikoff.
Good afternoon, all.
All right, everyone. So thank you so much for that. We're going to move on to the next part of our agenda, which is the Employee Assembly R1 approval of the 2024-2025 operations budget. I don't recall, Jessica, or yes, Wendy.
This is where you pass it over to me, Yvonne.
Thank you.
I have to introduce it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Do I have screen sharing capability?
Checking it now, Wendy.
Thanks, Eric.
Should be good to go now.
Awesome. So I'm going to bring up on my screen the resolution so that people can see it. Pretty cut and dry. It's just the approval of our 2024-2025 operating budget. In the section in our charter, we have the authority and control over our policies, operations, and maintenance. The funds for our budget comes from the Division of University Relations, and they are intended to support the EA, our meetings, committees, events, and elections. They are not intended to support initiatives, resources designated in resolutions, transfers to other entities of the university, support of HR initiatives, other co-sponsorships of events not owned by the Employee Assembly. So this was put before the executive committee last Friday. It was voted on and passed by the executive committee. I'll stop sharing this part of my screen and I'll share the actual budget. So as you can see, we are allocated $9,650 each year. Whatever is left over does not roll over to us each year. And if there's any balance that remains, it actually goes back to university relations. Right now, we do already have some expenses there. If they were from, we had the retreat in July, the meet and greet that was in August, we are responsible for costs that are incurred for the staff recognition and award. So that would be the George Peters Dedicated Service Award and the award for staff integrity and inclusion. I think I probably am getting that one wrong. We also have costs that would be addressed or incurred for the president's address to staff. We did speak in the executive committee about some small like coffee meetings maybe, or afternoons, cookies and that kind of thing. So those costs are kind of incorporated into the budget. But and these files, both the resolution and the spreadsheet, are in the box folder if someone wants to take a deeper dive and look at it. But that's just pretty much the overview. That's it. I open up to questions, discussion, feedback. If there is none, Yvonne can call for a motion to approve. We'll second it. We'll have to do the thumbs up, thumbs down, whatever it might be.
So this is not by unanimous vote, Wendy. Do we have to vote for this one?
We have to vote for this one, yeah.
All right.
Only the minutes typically are by unanimous consent. Resolutions, you need thumbs up, thumbs down.
Great. So motion to approve the, yes, Jeremy.
Motion to approve.
Second. All those in favor of approving the budget, if you can go to your React buttons and use the green check mark to approve. Anyone who votes no, right, can use the X, and I'm just going to do it as an example. Right, and anyone abstaining from this vote can use the reaction of slow down, and I'll show as an example as well. All right. Was I supposed to keep a count of the people? Yes.
Ivana, I had 20 yes, 0, and 1 abstention.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Eric.
You're welcome.
Thank you, everyone. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Wendy, for that. We move on to the next part of our agenda, which really is liaison reports, open discussion. I think it's open for discussion. If anyone wants to bring a topic that you wish to talk about. Yes, Danielle.
Liaison report wise, I attended the faculty senate meeting, and there were a few things that were coming up. First, faculty are basically being prepared for the potential for the grad students to strike and what the impact will be. There was a lot of discussion about that. There was also a discussion about new guidelines for academic integrity that I was a little concerned about, including it. The gist of it being that faculty is concerned that their exams and their problem sets and things are ending up on, places like Chegg and things like that, which is understandable. But the policy also covers like taking pictures in class. If you were to take a picture of like what a TA had or an instructor had written on a board, for example, for your reference for studying, that would be considered an academic integrity violation. My concern being that this is now part of the policy and the instructors are expected to enforce this. And I feel like there's a lot of opportunity for bias in how it's enforced. And I also don't feel like the students, they seem to think that if they made a policy, that the students would read it and know about it. I work with students all day and know that's not the case. So that was my primary concern with that. There was concern regarding the use of Cornell emails, especially listservs for political messaging. There was some concern about information in the syllabus where someone offered support services based on specific wording about the Gaza conflict that some felt was biased. But a lot of it was academic integrity, and a lot of it was, what are we going to do if the grad students go on strike in terms of how are the classes going to meet? How is research going to go on?
Thank you, Danielle. Is anyone here one of our reps from the UA?
I haven't heard anything from welfare yet.
I can speak to the UA stuff. I was hoping actually Marcy was still on the call, and she's not.
Yes, Wendy.
The UA met last night, actually, and there wasn't actually, I'm a little surprised, Danielle, that you brought up that with the Faculty Senate, because that was not mentioned at all during the UA meeting last night. There was conversation, the SA president, just during the open discussion, had a comment about parking violations and maybe possibly working with transportation about offering an alternative to individuals that have not a stack of parking tickets, but maybe like one or two, and possibly like volunteering time somewhere or donating to a food pantry as an alternative to paying money for that. Oklahoma State University, which is the land grant university in Oklahoma, has a similar setup. And so the consensus was the site committee for the UA, it's the campus technology environment, that one, to reach out to transportation and possibly invite them to a future UA meeting. Other than that, it was kind of quiet. It was only the second UA meeting of the semester. Jessica, I'm going to look to you to see if I missed anything.
No, that sounds about right. And just so Danielle knows, they just appointed a welfare committee chair last night. So nothing has happened. You haven't missed anything yet.
Thanks, Jessica.
Thank you. Yes, Jessica.
If there are no other liaisons or comments, you can always ask for a motion to adjourn.
Thank you. If there are no other comments to those liaison reports or anything additional that the EA wants to discuss today, can I request the motion to adjourn? Yes, Jeremy.
Motion to adjourn.
Seconded.
Thank you, Wendy. And with that, we are adjourning our second EA meeting at 1:11 p.m. Thank you all so much for being here.
Really great job, Yvonne.
Yes.
Take care, everyone.
Motion to adjourn is when everyone unmutes themselves because they want to either motion to adjourn or second it.
Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.